This is Audible.
Imperator, Wrath of the Omnissiah, by Gav Thorpe, read by John Banks. A note from the author. The character Magos Exasus identifies as genderless, and I've used a set of non-gendered pronouns to convey this. There are many different genderless pronouns that are recommended, and I opted for vi, viz, and ver, as these seem to be clear enough to the reader or listener whilst having no bias towards gendered pronoun root. There is also a great deal of communication via the noospheric link between tech priests, a kind of Adeptus Mechanicus Wi-Fi hotspot. For this reason, not all dialogue is literally spoken word, but rather an exchange of information via the binaric language of Metallica. From the pinnacle of Azkallak's immense citadel, Kashau could see as far as the Demetrian Plains and beyond the silvery line of the Laskai River. All that she surveyed was a scene of destruction. The city that nestled around the great fortress was almost untouched. Here and there, a district had been flattened by long-range missiles of opportunistic orbital fire. Further out, there was barely a hectare of mountainside or flatland not marked by shell crater, wreck, or corpse. The streams that fed the Laskai ran red with blood seeping from the battle dead. Woodlands had been burned to dunes of ash. The sky itself was stained with the smoke of burning tanks and transports. Even now, the shadow of another army spread across the river like a pall of filth.
"Hundreds of thousands dead, and still they persist," she said, glancing to her companion. She pulled her cloak tighter about her, the cold wind tousling greying hair. "The servants of the false light will never cease in their attempts to silence the truth."
The man beside her, her husband of 72 years, as judged on Nicomedua, shrugged. "The truth does not care for our travails." He extended a segmented artificial limb and laid it about her shoulders, pulling her closer. She felt the familiar jag of his other augmentations pressing against her flesh from beneath his black robe, a robe that had been red in deference to Mars until 3 years ago. "The longer we prevail, the greater the power of the truth we uncover." He waved a pincer-clawed hand across the scene of devastation. "They ruin themselves in a quest for ignorance." A bright flash drew their eyes upwards. The sky was dimming to evening, and several glints of dying light were reflected in the heavens. Dropships. It was not long before the city's block-sized landers could clearly be seen, 7 of them, followed by an uncountable swarm of smaller craft.
"They are larger than those that came before," remarked Kashau.
"Titans," said Longmire. "The machine god finally sends the engines of death."
"Titans," whispered Kashau,
cowed by the thought of the war machines descending towards Nicomedua. A steady stream of dropcraft fell towards the planet, bringing a battle force whose entire purpose was to break cities and conquer worlds. Long plasma jets shone brighter than the setting suns as they prepared to touch down beside the river. She shuddered.
"Do not fret, Kashau," Longmire smiled. "The tangential path shall set us all free."
Chapter 1. The Casus Belli Goes to War.
"Almighty Machine God, whose data binds the universe, look upon your humble servant, and let the tangents of your intersection be beneficent."
As we spoke the ritual lines, Magos Dominus Militaris Jausanus Scitara Ziliarcus Exasus dilated the dorsal spiracles of his intertracular lymphoid to release a cloud of bacteriophagic incense. The vapor billowed as a purple cloud, cleansing the air of biological contaminants that might infect the implant connection points in the few remaining parts of Vis' flesh. Vis' sense of smell had been replaced by far more complex molecular senses when Vis' face had been removed, yet Vis' sensory system still latched on to the old memories and interpreted the smell as forge exhaust and hot metal. It was an aroma that Vis' had known since Vis' first moments in the incense-sterilized hatcheries of Metallica. Lifting up one of four multi-jointed gripping limbs, Exarsus let three drops of blessed lubricant spill from the slender bottle in Vis' grip. Flexible optical lenses, capable of microscopic vision, tracked the trio of liquid spheres as they fell past the gantry on which Exarsus stood with the other senior tech priests of Cassus Belli. We followed their fall for several meters until they hit the gilded crest of the Titan's head below. From this vantage point, the Imperator continued down into the brightly illuminated main deck of the Legio Metallica landing barge. Arrayed about the feet citadels of the Cassus Belli were lines of white-clad Scutari waiting for the command to board, arranged by squad and platoon, the precision of their ranks pleasing to Exarsus. Vis extended a link through the noosphere that connected to the Scutari Alphas far below. At Vis' invisible command, the squad leaders became surrogates for Vis' physical presence, an extension of Vis' communication system. Even as Vis framed the thoughts, the words were announced by the mouths of the dozen Alphas ringing from across the Titan dock.
Tech guard of the Cassus Belli, the perambulations of destiny have again brought us to holy war. Our great Imperator is to be unleashed against the heretic darkness that has befallen Nicomedua. The servants of the Omnissiah have turned from their duties, and we shall be the punishment unleashed against them in the name of the Machine God. The Legio Metallica are blessed to be chosen as the executioners of this sacred task. With our companion engines, we shall see Nicomedua delivered back to the light of diligent service. I stand before you as Magos Dominus, incarnation of the martial precision of the cult Metallica. We are one, indivisible, favored in the working of the Machine God, for we have been given this sacred duty, and in its completion shall move closer to the perfection of the Omnissiah's design.
Another noospheric pulse sent the embarkation order into the Alphas, who disseminated the command to their squads. In unison, the Scutari offered their weapons in salute, and then turned towards the gates of the Imperator's citadel-like lower legs.
I still do not comprehend why you insist upon this ceremony. One might as well expend energy boosting the morale of a circuit breaker.
Recognizing the voice of Zerke Metallis Gevrin, the Dominus turned his centipede-like body to face the Moderatus Prime. Along with the other Moderati, Gevrin approached along the docking gantry, passing from the light of the vast chamber into the shadow of the Cassus Belli's Acropolis Carapace superstructure. Unlike the Magos and the other tech priests, the Moderatus Prime and his companions mostly retained their human anatomy. It was partly in honor of the humanoid form of the Titan, and partly because when they interfaced with the Cassus Belli's mind impulse units, it remained more natural for them if they shared the same number of limbs and basic shape. Even the hint of a phantom limb reaction could prove devastating when spiritually connected to a 40-meter-tall war engine. They wore bulky piloting uniforms rather than robes, though in the same white as the Metallican tech priests, and each carried their interface helm under their arm. Gevrin himself was a solid figure, broad at the waist and shoulder, with a similarly slab-like face and flat nose. The glitter of implants behind his eyes and a few stud points in the sides of his neck indicated the presence of the mind-impulse unit connections inserted into his flesh.
"It is not as if your warriors will contribute anything meaningful to this battle," added Moderatus Secundus Haley.
Her smile was one of patient contempt as the group stopped on the other side of the gantry line, leaving a path to the command module entry ramp.
"We shall leave them only ruins to guard." "There are some duties beyond even the wrath of the Cassus Belli, Zerke," argued Exarsus. "Tasks that are beneath the dignity of an Imperator Titan, but nonetheless vital to victory. If the ruins need to be guarded, my Scutari will be equal to the challenge.
They are simply martial lubrication, Jarzanes, said Gevrin. Human grease for the gears of battle. It is a pity that you waste your intellect with such a dull subject.
The last moderatus, Razdir, said nothing, but his expression was one of condescension. The coterie of moderati fell silent at the approach of the princeps senioris. Like them, she did not wear the robes of office, but her single-piece protective suit was more elaborate, decorated with gilded piping and ruby-studded fasteners. Her face was lined with age, and the toll of melding with the psychometric circuits of the casus belli. Slender black lines beneath the skin of her neck and throat, and in the backs of the hands that held the interface helm, betrayed the presence of life-prolonging inserts. She walked with the aid of a cane, fashioned from the bone of a titan-sized tyrannid beast they had destroyed on Durasa IV.
"You are looking at my stick again, Magos Dominus,"
Princeps Senioris Ileona said.
"Even with your 5 independent visual detectors, I can tell when you are looking at my cane."
"Your perception is infallible as ever, Princeps Senioris." Exarsus constricted vis body segments to shorten herself, bringing vis theoretical eyeline to the same level as the Princeps Senioris's.
"It seems an unnecessary peripheral assistance."
"And I must remind you again that I cannot risk my harmony with the casus belli with further changes to my physiology or chemical balances. So I must limp."
She stopped between the two groups, tech priests of all shapes and sizes to the left, human moderati on her right. As with the Imperator itself, she was the fulcrum upon which the alliance turned. The mechanical and the organic fused within her when she interfaced with the Titan.
"You wish to test Liberic's 4th theorem during our engagement?"
she said, looking at Exarsus. "I do," the Magos replied. He caught Gevrin shaking his head scornfully. "I have proposed a corollary that I wish to enact with my troops, if it is possible."
"I will see what can be done. But I think it unlikely there will be any infantry engagement today."
Despite the life extension surgeries and cerebral enhancements we had undergone, the Dominus was still capable of disappointment. We remained still, containing any display of the emotion before the Princeps Senioris.
"I am your honored servant, Princeps Senioris. We shall do as the machine god moves us."
"That we shall," said Ileona.
She glanced at her moderati and waved her cane towards the zigzagging ramp that led into the open gate in the side of the Imperator's head.
"Time to get started. We are due to rendezvous with the rest of our battle group in 47 minutes and begin the assault in 60. 6 warlords, 3 reavers, 3 warhounds and a pair of warriors shall be accompanying us. And a whole Scutari support echelon. We shall not keep them waiting."
They advanced as a group along the gantry. It made Exarsus uncomfortable, seeing their individual stride patterns, making no effort to harmonize their movements. Their humanity was meant to be key to their success with the Mind Impulse unit, but to the Magos it seemed like a terrible inefficiency. We spurted an audible packet of binaric at the other tech priests, and together they followed the humans into the casus belli. Each of them, in turn, briefly approached the small shrine alcove in the docking vestibule, laying a hand or tentacle-like mechadendrite on the 12-toothed cog symbol rendered in gleaming platinum upon the devotional stand. Exarsus placed the tip of a tendril against the symbol and felt a pulse of recognition from the Titan's dormant spirit.
"Benevolent casus belli, I commend my body to your protection and dedicate my mind to your service."
An archway led to a corridor that descended into the command module proper, cleansing incense falling curtain-like across the opening. Exarsus moved through, inhaling deeply of the strong fragrance, neuroreceptors firing swiftly under the influence of the stimulating agents contained within the mist.
"Almighty Machine God, whose data binds the universe, look upon your humble servant and let the tangents of your intersection be beneficent."
The calipers of Gelsa's augmetic phalanges clicked as her dark-skinned fingers closed around 6 meticulously inscribed steel polyhedrons. She lifted them from the polished offering plate and touched them to the breast of her off-white coverall. Gelsa kissed her steel-wrapped fist and held the shapes to her brow. Her metal-capped knuckles clinked against the silver 12-toothed cog set into the flesh of her forehead before she threw her hand down. Cast from her fingers, the 12-sided dice clattered into the concave bowl, skittering around the raised lip. Shadows and light played over the spinning, skipping shapes as the silent watchers crowded closer, peering over Gelsa's and Adrina's shoulders as they waited for the dice to come to a halt. The Deleuze of the downdecks wore a mixture of tabards, half-robes, kilts, and coveralls, depending on station and expertise. Many showed signs of crude augmentation, either gifted by a patron in the upper echelons of the priesthood, or made in one of the basic workshops of the lower spaces. Like Gelsa's, their clothes were uniformly off-white, the colours of their hegemarchus, the forge world of Metallica. Their formal allegiance colours were augmented with an array of tattoos, piercings, brand marks, and other decorations to identify homeworld, sect membership, personal relationships, and other sundry information. Most had not seen the metal-sheathed planet, but were natives of various vassal systems, or the detritus of conquest and liberation swept up by the Casus Belli on one of its many campaigns. Gelsa was one such tributi, sent to serve in the Legio Metallica as part of an ancient pact between the tech priests and her world of Zakynta. The gaming pieces belonged to Gelsa, who was proud to tell anyone who asked that she had made them herself from bearings that had once been part of the Casus Belli's starboard hip main rotator. She had salvaged them 2 years earlier during a rededication to the Machine God, and spent half of that time diligently filing the flat surfaces with a hand rasp and auto-polish. She had used an acid stylus to etch the 12 sacred symbols, each one of the perfections of form as listed in the holy books of Metallica. A red flare of light played over the settled dodecahedrons, the signal beam from Adrina's artificial left eye. Gelsa was quicker to count the revealed symbols than her opponent's scan mechanism.
4 iambic crucibe, she groaned, throwing up her hands in despair.
Militus Marcia,
her opponent cried in triumph, reverting to crude Gothic in his excitement. There was a mix of cheers and moans from the onlookers as various side bets were won and lost. Adrina held out a pudgy, oil-stained hand, his smile not unkind. Half a tattoo was just visible where his wrist entered the tattered white cuff of his overseer's robe, depicting the iron skull of the Legio icon. He was a Pelectos, Metallican-born, hence his higher station. He beckoned with fingers tipped with broken nails, their golden enamel chipped and scratched.
"Hand it over, Vinjaint. Everyone saw you swear the wager before the Omnisire's oracular."
She delved a hand into one of her coverall's many pockets and produced a thin sliver of circuit-covered plastic. Adrina leered as he made to snatch it from her fingers. Gelsa pulled it out of reach.
"One downshift only," she warned, glancing to the others as witnesses. "And if you're caught, you didn't get it from me."
Adrina nodded, his fingers twitching in excitement.
"Come on, come on. My downshift starts soon."
Eyes narrowed. Gelsa handed over the forged data chip. The overseer thrust it into an inner pocket of his robe, hiked his chain of office more comfortably around his neck, and gave a smile. He stood, head bent to one side to avoid the condensation-dappled coolant pipe that ran through the small chamber.
"Always a pleasure, Vinjaint. Luckily for all of us, you're a better spindle-wrangler than you are a player of Omnisec."
The crowd parted to let Adrina pass, and they filed away, ducking beneath the various cables, pipes, and other impediments between them and the small hatch that led back into maintenance duct S-11. Notasa lingered for a moment after the others had left, his gaze suggestive, which was impressive, considering his eyes had been mirror-sheathed, the orbs like pure quicksilver.
"You can't win at everything, Gelsa," said the diminutive duct-runner.
He leaned back against the bulkhead, arching his neck like a contented feline.
but no need to be sad for long.
The lower port manifold array is coming loose, Gelser said, with a grimace of lost opportunity. I really should go and fix it.
Always so dutiful, snapped Natasa, his anger fueled by rejection.
He flicked stained blonde hair from his face, revealing skin pocked with tiny scars from errant welder sparks.
You know they'll never make you Epilectos, no matter how hard you work. You'll always be Tributi, like the rest of us.
You've got it all wrong, birth friend, Gelser said, stepping forward. She picked up the meter-long multi-tool she had left beside the door. Its considerable weight was nothing in her grasp, her own significant musculature assisted by a tracery of exoskeletal cable sealed into her flesh.
How about on the downshift?
Gelser asked, feeling the urge to reconcile, even though, rationally, she knew she had done nothing wrong.
Just go and fix that manifold array, muttered Natasa, stepping away from the hatch. Maybe we'll see each other later.
Already anxious about the time she had spent playing Omnisec, Gelser aimed a kiss towards Notasa's cheek, but he retreated, scowling. The spindle wrangler ducked out into the corridor, stepping out from the relative cool and quiet of the coolant exchange access. The sound had always been there, of course, and most of the time Gelser barely registered it. For 3.5 years, Martian adjusted standard, she had lived on or around the Casus Belli. Since achieving adulthood, her existence had been dedicated to the services of the Machine God, as dictated and directed by the Adeptus Mechanicus. Yet there were times, like now, when she moved from one part of the downdecks to another and listened again, her attention drawn back to the nuances of her home. There was the obvious noise, the clatter and clank, the grinding of the massive gears, the low pulsing of the reactor links. Any neophyte could identify them within a matter of days. It was the deeper, quieter sounds that were the most welcoming. The hiss of coolant as a spin-off drained heat down from the main reactor exchanges. The ever-present gurgle of waste water falling through the cisterns beneath the starboard decks. The thrum of the pumps inside the capillary towers that took lubricant up to the immense hellstorm cannon. She stepped into a pass niche as a trio of sweat-slicked Matakai laborers dashed past, the uncoupled pieces of their thrum hammer over their shoulders, power cables swishing like monkey tails. Droplets of perspiration trickled down her cheek and the side of her nose, the heat and humidity of the coreways as oppressive as the first-hour labor sermons of the tech priests. Gelser made her way along the corridor, the metal dappled by the pale yellow glow of lumens behind wire cages, in places splashed by the green or amber of a system registry lamp, through a grimy inspection plate. Through the mechanical din, she detected organic sounds, the hacking cough of Mercadoa, who was still waiting on a promised new lung after an incident with the trash conflagrator's secondary exhaust. Chatter. Ceaseless, unintelligible sounds occasionally punctuated by a spurt of screeching, clicking binaric from a passing engine sear, and ever so occasionally, the artificially modulated tones of a higher-ranking tech priest descended from the god decks to conduct an inspection or investigate a delayed report. Just as her constitution had adapted to the clammy conditions and her ears were attuned to the sonic flexes of the internal society of the downdecks, so her eyes were well accustomed to the gloom. With her other senses guiding her unconsciously to her destination, Gelser was free to wander almost at will, knowing instinctively where to step around open hatches, dodge across ladder holes, and duck beneath intervening cables and piping. It was mid-shift, and most of the others were at their stations, the narrow walkways and transit bridges populated only by occasional movement. Through the doors and arches she passed, she saw other tributi at their work, blotches of white through clouds of vapor. She saw smears of paleness in dark maintenance bays, or clustered around the fully robed engine seers, as some fundamental duty was enacted, or a principle of conduct passed on for the appeasement of an itinerant fragment of Casus Belli's all-encompassing machine spirit. Thoughts fixed on her job in the lowest decks, Gelser moved on. The command module dominated the inside of the Imperator Titan's head. Two massive eye-like screens relayed real-time feeds from thousands of augers across the war engine, creating a complex representation of the surroundings in both visual and noospheric frameworks.
Exasus not only saw the doors of the barge's hangar as a human would, but knew exactly the composition of the metal and the weight and torsion values, as well as a welter of data on atmospheric pressure, temperature, and other tertiary readings. It was the closest V could come to feeling as the Titan felt, without the benefit of the mind impulse units to organically share the sensation. The Princeps Senioris's main command throne sat on a dais towards the back of the chamber, looking down at the three moderati positions. Each was a reclining chair, beneath a tangle of cables that would connect to the incumbent's MIU systems. On the left, Moderatus Haley controlled the energies of the plasma annihilator. The twinned position on the right, for the Hellstorm cannon, was the seat of Moderatus Razdir. The two of them made for their couches, handing their interface helms to the tech priests attending each station. Moderatus Gevrin was stationed between them, responsible for the activation and monitoring of the rest of the Casus Belli's considerable arsenal, main battery, defense laser, anti-aircraft systems, and point defense weaponry. In most Titans, the Moderati were in sole control of their armaments, but the guns of the Casus Belli were too large for a single Moderatus to control, or in the case of Gevrin, too numerous. They were aided by gunnery teams with the weapons themselves, mostly slaved servitors that acted as extensions of the Moderatus's will, each team overseen by a trio of tech priests to ensure their continued operation. Between the Princeps Senioris's throne and the Moderati, and along the outer walls of the chamber to either side, the tech priests addressed their panels and interfaces. The Noosphere crackled with their intent, linking their minds even as data ports and mechadendrites connected them physically with the Omnisire's greatest warrior. Exasus's position was just behind the Moderatus Prime, from which they could link to the Noosphere signals related to the Skitari systems and personnel. Connecting to the cogitators, V felt the company of warriors settling into their barracks chambers within the two-leg citadels, and several more platoons likewise preparing for departure in the battle stations of the Acropolis. V could feel the Skitari as a homogeneous force, or relay part of his strategic consciousness into one of 142 separate organisms via their noospheric cortical weaves. In a split second, the Magos Dominus could switch to the individual view of a particular warrior. He picked one on a whim and watched the faces of the three soldiers opposite through his chosen receptacle's eyes. At the same time, cyclical simulators tracked other battle-pertinent data feeds, for the moment semi-dormant and reliant on the last orbital data uploads they had taken just before boarding. Little had changed, and the Princeps Senioris's assessment that there was only a small probability of infantry engagement remained accurate. Their mission was to break the Heretic lines defending a citadel and break into the mountain passes, spearheading the full battle group. It was an overwhelming use of force, mounted not only to sweep aside the barriers to the advances of the Astra Militarum and other Skitari armies, but also to demonstrate the folly of further resistance to the will of the Omnisire. Exasus played back Viz's memory store of the Prime Dominus's instruction, passing it through Viz's thoughts and into the minds of Viz's subordinates. Exasus.
As Kallak will burn by nightfall.
A tremor ran through the Noosphere, a throb of intent that channeled into every data feed. Exasus turned one of Viz's sensory inputs to the Princeps Senioris, and saw that she wore her helm, its MIU cables linking her to the essence of the behemoth she would guide into battle. Sharing her thoughts, made whole by the metaphorical sacrifice of her consciousness, Casus Belli started to rise from its slumber. The leading edge of a powerful wave of awareness touched upon the Noosphere, and digital systems flickered into wakefulness, caressing Exasus's sensory inputs. We heard a sigh from Iolona's parted lips, grunts and murmurs emanating from the Moderati as they were joined to the machine spirit. Exasus could not comprehend how it might feel to be one with the god machine. He could interpret the millions of data signals and extrapolate sensory curves for eternity, and still not know what it was like to share physicality with the might of the Imperator. Only Iolona and her predecessors had shared that singular, glorious experience. A visual feed highlighted a glint of amber light on the head of the bone cane, leaning against the side of the command throne. While monitoring the other developments, Exasus allowed a portion of his thoughts to consider the implications. Princeps senioris, and to a lesser extent moderati, had shortened lifespans due to their connections with the immortal spirits of the Titans. For the machine god's warriors to live, their mortal components had to shed a little of their span. Even as her frail body was failing, the Princeps senioris was able to clad her thoughts in the armor and power of the Imperator. She could not escape her mortality, in fact, she hastened it, but in the time she had, she could share the body and thoughts of an immortal. As an exchange, it was not without merit. The noosphere flared with reports and counter-signals, confirming the readings of the plasma reactor, the online status of motivation and balance systems, and the networking of the mind impulse units with the Moderati and Princeps senioris. Exassus sent his own confirmations, having spared a moment to check that all Skitari personnel were aboard and at their stations. Awoken, the spirit of Casus Belli yearned to be free of the confines of the barge. With a final flurry of data exchanges, the tech priests allowed the reactor to come to full power and the MIU to flow unhindered between the circuits of the Imperator and the synapses of its Princeps senioris. Casus Belli lived. In semi-aware fashion, Gelser traversed the main lateral passages of the Imperator Titan's downdecks, coming upon the third service shaft from the rear. The mechanism was nothing more than an old autoloader, repurposed by the engine crew for human cargo. Two shafts contained a continuously slow-moving chain, every few meter-long links interspersed with a metal platform, just large enough for a foot. Gelser waited at the drop shaft until the next platform rattled into view, and then quickly stepped out, bare foot on the plate, one arm wrapping through a chain link. The descent carried her past the wall of heat that emanated from the sealed reactor decks into the comparative gloom and cool of the motivator and traction assembly. So much quicker than negotiating the monkey ladders. She deftly jumped off at the main actuator array, a huge gearing system that powered the left hip joint of the 40-meter-tall war engine. Artificial fiber bundles, each thicker than her waist, vibrated with latent power, while the hiss of immense pneumatics punctuated a steady grinding of metal on metal. The entire compartment shook, a constant tremor that pulsed through the nervous system. Just a few meters away, immense cog teeth that could crush her in moments knitted together, the piercing screech of their contact setting her teeth on edge. She immediately saw the dysfunction, her experienced eye drawn to the ever-so-slight wobble of her tertiary drive shaft linking in to the main coupling. Here, close to the fulcrum of the hip's movement, there was little sense of vertical motion compared to the upper down-decks or the heights of the temple decks. The floor rose and lowered laboriously, like a ship on a lazy ocean swell. The turn of the gears was a far better indication of the Titan's stride. At the moment, it was at a comfortable cruising pace, perhaps 4 strides per minute, each step covering some 15 meters of ground. They had been in motion for a while, since before the dice game had started, and she reckoned the landing barge was now several kilometers behind them. There was a pause of 3.5 seconds at the apogee of the striding, during which cantilevers and secondary gyros compensated for the shift of weight from one system to the other. Gelser waited, bobbing lightly on the balls of her feet, adjusting the wrench head of the multi-tool to the required bite. Just as the drop gear shifted into place, some 20 meters below her, the Titan's massive foot settled into the ground. Gelser sprang into action. She pulled herself up onto the box of the main drivetrain and latched the head of the multi-tool around the errant fitting. Her exo-muscles creaked as she pulled back, one foot braced against the cross-stanchion. One turn. Two. The second pull seized at the halfway mark, fully tightened. Gelser loosened the tool, pulled it free, and jumped back to the deck with 0.5 seconds to spare. She watched the drive system engage again and listened for an erroneous clatter. The wheel spun smoothly, its low growl testament to a job completed. "The machine God blesses," she intoned, lifting the multi-tool to touch the god plate upon her brow. "In praise of the Omnisire, our duty is done." She cast her eye around for any other small fixes that might be performed while she was there, but all seemed to be running well. The tributi took a deep breath. The air was thick with lubricant and incense, a mix she had come to know and adore in her time aboard the Casus Belli. Those of different homes might long for the scent of fresh bread or the animals in their pens, but for Gelsa, it was the machine smells that made her feel safe. By the rattle of the lifter chain, she knew a platform was coming around. She stepped back into the alcove without looking, her foot coming upon the plate just as it passed the level of the floor. Taken up once more, she wondered what other tasks awaited her, and started to hum a slow incanter in her contentment. Two decks up, just below the reactor exchanges, movement and alien sound caught her attention. Through the grill of the deck above, she saw a huddle of people wearing the red-lined cloaks of the Hyperesia, the tech priest's enforcers in the down decks. Their grunts and shouts were audible above the noise, and Gelsa could clearly see fists and short staves rising and falling. They were beating someone. She was not one to interfere in the disciplining of another, but that it took place here, in the dark, rather than before the peers of the offender, struck her as odd. Gelsa alighted on the deck a few meters away from the gaggle, noting the blood on their knuckles and mauls. "What's happening here?" she called out. One of the Hyperesia cast a glance over his shoulder, bearded face half shrouded in shadow.
"Get gone, oil rat,"
snarled the henchman. In moving, he revealed something of the victim. Gelsa glimpsed a blood-spattered hand and a white sleeve, but saw no mark upon the wrist.
"Ho there! That's a tributi!" she shouted, taking another step.
"He's a heretic, is what he is!"
one of the others spat back, her face contorted in anger.
"By word of the Moderatus Prime!"
Invoking the rank of their superior only worsened their case. It all seemed out of place.
"You're killing him!"
"Want some as well?"
growled the first of the watchmen, lifting his baton towards her. Gelsa covered the distance in three strides, the last of which was accompanied by the upswing of the multi-tool. Powered by momentum, thick muscle and reinforced armature, the heavy metal implement struck the Hyperesia's chin at full speed. Bones splintered and the guard toppled back, blood spraying from his ruined mouth. Gelsa was no warrior, but her augmented body gave her strength enough to compensate for a lack of skill. Her next blow shattered the baton raised to ward it away and smashed into the chest of the man holding it, hurling him backwards with her broken breastbone. A fist glanced off her cheek, nothing worse than she had suffered in one of her spats with Notasa or a fight in the Narkhide. Her return blow to the woman's gut lifted the Hyperesia off her feet, the air exploding from her lungs in a hoarse whistle. The guard crumpled, gasping, while the remaining three backed off, their rods held warily before them. The spindle wrangler glanced down at their victim. He was caked in blood and garbed in the robe of a tributi clerical worker, one of the log keepers, perhaps. He rolled to his back with a groan, revealing a face swollen about the eyes and mouth, his cool beige complexion looking jaundiced in the poor light. She didn't recognize him. Gelsa hefted the stranger up onto her shoulder, thrusting the multi-tool threateningly at the others.
"Leave it be. Tell Gevrin the deed is done, and no more need be said."
The Hyperesia did not look convinced, but they made no further effort to molest her as she backtracked towards the clanking chain of the ascender shaft. With a quiet groan, the man roused as she lowered him, holding his body close to hers while she waited for the next platform to come around. He peered at her through the slit of a bloodshot grey eye, childlike against her mass.
"Danger," he croaked.
"No, you're safe now," she assured him, moving her arm protectively around his shoulder as she darted a glare at the guards, who were tending to their own injured. "Well, relatively safe."
"All of us," whispered the man. "Heretics."
The platform rattled past, and Gelsa missed it, distracted by this statement.
"The Princeps is a traitor,"
the man continued wheezily, every word a clear effort through the pain. Whoever he was, Gelsa admired the sheer will it must have taken for him to remain conscious.
"Will doom us all."
"Says who?"
Gelsa was startled, but she had enough presence of mind to drag her companion into the lift when the next platform appeared. The man said something else, but it was lost in the noise of the conveyance.
"What was that?"
Gelsa said, raising her voice. He pushed closer, and she bent an ear towards his bloodied lips.
I am an Inquisitor.
Chapter 2. Az-Kallak. Volleys of phosphor blasts lashed through the probing column of heretics, reinforced by a thunderous barrage of heavier weapons fire. Their armor, no match for the weapons arrayed against them in the carefully prepared ambush, the 60-strong enemy force was halved in the opening seconds. White-coated Skitari used side streets to sweep around the back of their foes, swiftly surrounding them, while Castellan constructs burst through broken walls, their phosphor blasters lighting the rubble-choked outskirts of Az-Kallak. Everything moved as Exassus willed it, each maneuver carefully controlled and timed for maximum kill efficiency. Skitari squads fell back and countered as easily as we extended or retracted a mechanical digit. Robot maniples were his fist, brutal but powerful, breaking all that they touched. The beset rebel combatants tried to break free, massing a frontal assault to push on towards the open wildlands that surrounded Az-Kallak. Exassus had foreseen that gambit and had prepared his defensive protocols accordingly. Two squads of Viscatari withdrew through the remnants of a storage house, emerging with several seconds to spare until they met the breakthrough with a precise, devastating fusillade. And then, the flourish that had taken several subjective years of study and calculation to formulate. The Exassus corollary to Liberec's fourth theorem. Given sufficient pressure, an adequately armed opposition will naturally seek not the weakest point of an attack, but the weakest point within closely bounded timing markers. If exploited, it meant a 0.43% increase in kill efficiency, temporal commitment.
Alert. Static position eliminated.
The transmission was one of seven that crowded into Exassus's noospheric awareness, joining many others in his memory queue for later assessment and formal archiving. With reluctance, we halted the simulation, rededicating the portion of his processing matriculator that had been subadjourned to carry out the thought exercise. The mathematical representations of the Skitari, their foes, and the ruined outskirts froze mid-equation, the scene imprinted upon his digital senses in as much stark detail as if it had been a real event. More so, since it had been his antirhythms that had conducted the battle, playing the part of both aggressor and defender. Every triumph and loss had been Exassus's to celebrate and suffer. It certainly felt more solid than the destruction being wrought by the Casus Belli and the rest of the battle group. Exassus only experienced the carnage second-hand, relying on the Titan's processors and the servitor exchanges to gather some sense of the forces unleashed. They had joined with the battle group as planned and entered the lowlands across the Asanaic River. Skitari support platoons in reconnaissance transports had swept aside the enemy's first stage forces. The Titans had not even slowed to engage the lightly armored and armed anti-grav skimmers. The approaches to Az-Kallak were a different matter. Several hundred enemy armored vehicles and walkers were dug in across the hills, along with considerable infantry support, for weeks an impenetrable barrier to the massed might of the Astra Militarum. Orbital defences within the fortress itself protected the siege lines from starship attack. Similarly potent anti-air guns prevented direct drop assault and anything but the most erratic high-altitude bombing and long-range shelling. In ferrocrete bunkers and kilometres of linking trenchworks and tunnels, the Renegades were able to weather such attacks with relatively little concern. Consequently, the defenders' heaviest artillery was able to move close to the outer line with some impunity, extending the lethal zone around the citadel by several more kilometres. The sheer scale of the endeavour had excited Exassus. Even though, as rebels, the enemy were equipped with standard Imperial equipment and materiel for the most part, which eliminated a large number of variables, the logistical calculations alone had required dedicated access to several logistaria slave to the Magos's pattern equations. We had recalibrated whole formulae to take into account the possible morale and discipline proclivities of a renegade faction. While the Magos had run thousands of scenario-specific data threads in transit to the world,
the Astra Militarum had employed the simpler but more costly approach of attacking with actual men and tanks. Repeatedly, despite mounting losses, in the assumption that their attritional rate was higher than that of the inhabitants, they had been wrong. The wreckage of previous armored thrusts lined highways with burnt-out chassis and mounds of blackened corpses. The Rock Creek roads themselves were little more than ribbons of cratered grey, their course plotted as much by the devastation written along their length as anything on a schematic chart. Assaults cross-country had fared little better. Pounce-flechettes, sniper teams and laz-traps awaited any pioneer corps that ventured forward to clear the heavier mines and self-propelled anti-tank guns. Tanks forging between the scattered copses of trees were soon targeted by the mobile artillery guns, each subsequent attack slowed and corralled by the metal corpses of its predecessors. The Imperial Guard commanders reckoned casualties in the tens of thousands without hesitation, but the slaughter at Az-Kalak had concerned even the Logistaria Corps attached to the Departamento Munitorum. It was not just an issue of manpower. New regiments could be raised without too much difficulty. Arming them proved a more difficult proposition, but many Forge Worlds had shifted full production to maintaining the arsenals of the Astra Militarum since the Great Rift had opened, and war, unlike anything seen in 10,000 years, had engulfed the Imperium. To Exarsis, it was only a matter of scale and time. Given sufficient raw materials, the Forge Worlds could provide the war materiel for thousands of such forces across Imperial history, and had done so. The real problem was starships, or the lack of them. The Imperial Navy was stretched to breaking, and every regiment lost on Nicomedua was another transport convoy that had to risk lengthy warp transit, each run to a recruiting world requiring armed escort, lest it be lost even before it reached the battle zone. Where such apocalypse had befallen the Imperial Navy and the Astra Militarum, the Titans of the Legio Metallica ventured without fear. 7 dedicated barges of the Legion carried the military might of 10 times that number of transports for lesser mortals and machines. Gevran.
I see that you've been amusing yourself with your simulator, Jazanus.
Though divorced from the Neosphere when not at his station, Gevran was able to direct transmit to the Magos via his MIU link. Exarsis marveled at the sophistication involved in digitally rendering and broadcasting just the exact tone of derision the Moderatus Prime desired. Gevran.
I suppose you have to do something with all of that binaric potency you've been allocated?
Before Exarsis could retort, the Noosphere crackled with command code as the plasma annihilator fired. 3 sequential blasts seared into the ravaged foothills, devastating a stretch of revetments and gun pits. Haley.
The true power of the machine god.
Static danced with her thought waves, the interference coming as her weapon cycled into its recharge phase, and feedback data from the gunnery crew streamed directly into the Moderatus's thoughts. Haley.
Even the humblest of our battle group will crush these miserable rebels.
It was true. The Warhound Scout Titans that led the advance scoured trench and bunker with their turbolasers and megabolters. The twinned inferno cannons of Steel Wolf filled subterranean tunnels with cleansing promethium fire, sheets of blue flame erupting from concealed entry points and gunnery slits. Behind came the Casus Belli and other battle titans. Reavers, warhounds, and warriors laid down a constant barrage of shells, lasers, and missiles, the devastation advancing across the scorched earth of the foothills like a bow wave before the massive war engines of the Cult Metallica. Quake cannons pierced meters-thick gates of outer towers, while apocalypse warheads ripped craters from the earth, tossing men, machines, and gravel high into the air. Gatling blasters, volcano cannons, and plasma destructors made a ruin of the enemy that fled the attack, shredding, crushing, and searing as the rebels abandoned their posts in their thousands and fleeing vehicles choked the broken roads. Ignoring wordless protests and grunts of pain, Gelsa hauled her companion off the lift chain just above the reactor decks. The ceiling was low, forcing her to proceed in a half-crouch, dragging the man across the smooth ferrocrete floor by the scruff of his robe. Level Decatrias was a tween space,
existing more for the necessity of the neighbouring systems than for any purpose of its own. There were no lumens, but a faint luminescent lichen provided a little light to navigate between the thick columns holding up the duodecas above. The gurgle of sestrains and the hiss of the coolant loop told her when she was as far from any grating or other ingress as was possible. The man flapped a hand at her, bruised and swollen from defending himself against the cudgels and kicks.
"Thank you."
Gelsa didn't answer. She wasn't at all sure whether she had just done something incredibly stupid or not. To distract herself, she fished inside her coverall and pulled out a slender flask of resynthesized alcohol. It was called machine spirits by the more jocular members of the deck crews, filtered out of the secondary fuel lines, diluted and flavoured to a variety of secret recipes from the various flora, and sometimes fauna, that eked an existence in the shadows of the down-decks. She passed it to the man, who took a sip, coughed speckles of blood across her coveralls, and then took a longer swig. Gelsa screwed on the cap and put the flask back into her pocket. She slipped out a wedge of dry water and pressed it between his lips. The inert chip of wood-like material activated with the merest contact of moisture to realign its molecules into a mouthful of water and vital salts. Intended for those on extended deep station in battle, with no access to the main water supplies, the dry water, like the machine spirits, had come her way via a more successful game of Omnisec a few days earlier. The stranger fumbled at his robe, checking the pockets in some agitation. He sat up, swayed for a moment as dizziness struck him, and then resumed his increasingly desperate search.
"No, no, no," he muttered.
He raised a hand to his head, wincing.
"Damn it!"
"What's the matter?" Gelsa helped him sit up, one hand on his back.
"My sigil, my inquisitorial sigil, gone. That serpent took it."
"How convenient," said Gelsa.
"What?"
He looked at her through the drying blood and bruises.
"You think I would pretend to be an inquisitor?"
"What seems more likely to you?"
Gelsa sat back on her heels, the multi-tool still in her hand, just in case.
"That the Moderatus Prime of an Imperator-class Titan is a heretic and ordered the killing of one of the Emperor's Inquisitors, or that you've been caught impersonating one?"
The man's shoulders slumped, and he gazed down towards the hard floor.
"I've failed. My pride. I should have known better."
"Let's idle the gears a moment," said Gelsa. "My name is Gelsa Vinjaint, Tributi Second Class, specializing in mass mechanics. I tighten and loosen things, and occasionally hit them. I don't know whose robes these are, but you definitely aren't a Tributi."
"You can call me Harkus. Osisiru Harkus is the name by which I currently am known. I am, as I claim, a member of the Holy Orders of the Emperor's Inquisition, and what I say is true. Your princeps intends to turn over the Casus Belli to the forces of the traitors."
Gelsa slowly absorbed this, not sure what to believe.
"So, how did you end up here?"
Wildfires raged through the foothills, the thick smoke obscuring more distant defences and the citadel itself. The smog was no obstruction to the noospheric enhanced sensors of the Casus Belli, whose targeting matrices could pinpoint a firing solution in pitch blackness up to the extent of a planet's curvature. The flare of white lasbeams, the startling blue hue of plasma, and the flames of missile detonations lit the smoke. Grey armoured vehicles swarmed like insects through the long grass. Exassus registered all of the standard and non-standard visible spectrum data without any sense of connection. We found more enlightenment from Viz matriculated decoding of the scene. Projectile velocities and impact forces clamoured for attention among the arc of temperature gradients, intersecting geometries of firing angles, and the ever-present kill efficiency calculations. Perfecting this last factor had become Exassus's life work. Even the one-sided slaughter playing out before her currently varied between a 98.8% and a 99.1% efficiency. Viz complex calculations took into account the expenditure of energy and resources, as well as received damage, and also a unique declining weighting based upon time expended. The main battery boomed, causing the superstructure of the Imperator to shudder. Trajectory angles superimposed upon Exarsus's thoughts fed from the neospheric link of the Moderatus Prime. The explosion ripped away the top of a fortified hill. Hundreds of tons of earth and ferrocrete turned to falling dust and grit littered with body parts. Exarsus flashed back to Gevran with a sub-packet of controlled amusement. Exarsus.
89.7%.
We transmitted targeting data for a few meters to the left of the impact point, where the reinforced structure of an ammunition store jutted intact from the debris. The Magos sent scans from a recon overflight made 2 days earlier that highlighted the sensor returns indicating the existence of the chamber. Exarsus.
Had you incorporated this INT data within your assessment, you would have improved your kill efficiency by 4.6%. You are wasteful with the Machine God's bounties, Zerkay.
Gevran.
Your concern is misguided, Zhao.
The Moderatus's use of the truncated form of address was particularly petty. Gevran.
140 Skitarii and their Dominus is a considerable expense of materiel and energy to leave idle.
It was hard to argue against that point, though Exarsus's equations contained a contingency formula to take into account periods of necessary dormancy. Gevran.
You still chase the false hope of promulgating your theorems to the Metallican Council. You think you are the next Adanadin Frex, perhaps? Or do you consider yourself on the level of the great Gaidwang Okosu? It has been more than 1,000 orbits since a Magos Dominus altered the Metallican protocols, for good reason. But you have the hubris to think that you can. Your previous two attempts failed, and so will your next. The Council has run out of patience. If you continue to test them, you will be fortunate to command a manufacturing garrison squad. You are deluded, Jauzanus.
The note of pity that accompanied the last statement irked Exarsus more than the contempt that had started the exchange. Exarsus.
We have entered paradigm-changing times, Zerkay. What was once accepted even on holy Mars is now thrown into doubt. If the roots burrowed deep by Godwin, Saxwis, and Land are being ripped free, there is every chance that the Metallican Grand Council will be willing to adopt my revisions of the Strategos programming.
A flare of derision accompanied the next transmission. Gevran.
You refer to Belisaria's call.
Exarsus.
For 10 millennia, he labored, manufacturing the greatest advancement of our understanding of the Machine God's will seen since the Imperial Incorporation.
Gevran.
Mars has forwarded accusations of tech heresy against Call.
Exarsus.
Metallica has not, and there is dissent among many other Forge worlds.
A flurry of notifications spat into the awareness of the Magos and Moderatus. It was a substrand of a strategic inload redirected from orbit via the landing barge's telemetry. Other such substrands were being apportioned to the other Titans, as well as the accompanying Skitarii forces and the Astra Militarum generals monitoring the Titan advance. The data blurt contained two important pieces of information. Exarsus split Viscogitator bypasses to consider them simultaneously. Both of these revelations were accompanied by unknown agitations in the noosphere, hinting at the possibility of heretic broadcasts between the two anomalies. Gevren's noospheric presence disappeared instantly, at the same moment that Exarsus severed his connection to combine all available synapses and processing structures into analysis of this fresh information. It took 14 centiseconds for the Magos Dominus's threat assessment protocols to issue a preliminary warning. It was echoed through the noosphere by Logistari and Analytica programs, all reaching the same conclusion.
Enemy reinforcements.
While verifying this tactical estimate, Exasus's neural network extrapolated the possibilities, inferring reasoning and potentialities from the known data. One theme quickly established itself. The enemy knew the extent of the Legio army being sent against them. Despite the terrible losses already suffered, the rebels had chosen to dispatch further forces against the incoming Titans.
The Logi's superior ventured an early analysis. Mondaras.
Desperation.
Exasus.
Why not commit them earlier? Why was the line not held? Even in desperation, better to bolster an intact defense than one that has started to falter.
The power of Casus Belli's latent machine spirit quelled all other noospheric chatter. Iolona.
You have an explanation, Dominus.
Algorithms raced into action as Exasus verified Viz's initial findings. Exasus.
There is a high probability that this movement signifies a trap.
The Inquisitor, if such he truly was, stroked a hand across his forehead, soothing away the furrows. When he spoke, he gazed across the half-deck, his voice quiet but assured.
I was guided to the Casus Belli by my readings of the Imperial Tarot. When I...
Wait. Of all the wars and titans across the galaxy, you were led to the Casus Belli. That's like finding a flange nut in a spoil heap.
He darted a look of annoyance at Gelsa. She returned it with a blank stare, a reminder that it was not her that needed help. He backed down, mastering his impatience with clenched fists.
I was in transit to Nicomedua already. The presence of...
He licked swollen lips, hesitating.
Renegade Mechanicus acolytes are of particular interest to me. My specialism, you might say. I was already drawn to the relief fleet by the news of the uprising and its support by traitors of the Dark Mechanicum. Conducting my standard readings of the Imperial Tarot, seeking insight into how best I might intervene in a worldwide conflict, I was guided by the Emperor's will to the forces of the Iron Skulls, your Legio. I was able to gain access to the landing barge while it was in orbit, and brief investigations, coupled with ciphered communiques from sympathetic agents within the Astra Militarum intelligence structure, convinced me that something was amiss on the Casus Belli. The thud of boots on the deck above and the clatter of the chainlift reminded Gelsa that they were still quite easy to find. Stooped under the bracings of the level above, she ushered Harkus further into the darkness. It was almost pitch black, but the man moved without hesitating, negotiating intersecting braces that could trip a stray foot, ducking beneath the potential garrots of cable tangles. Even with her knowledge of the space, it being one of a handful of truly private areas in the downdecks, Gelsa banged her head twice and stubbed her toe.
"Just there," she said, pointing with the multi-tool at a recess between a flue rising from the pelvic motors and a down-drain that connected the holy decks to the vaporizer inlets of the sewage vats. "So you stole a tributi robe and managed to sneak aboard during the drop, I'm guessing?"
"That is correct."
"And then showed your proof to the Moderatus Prime?"
He did not answer immediately, the pause raising Gelsa's suspicions again. She adjusted her grip on the multi-tool.
"You have proof of everything you say, right?"
"I am an Inquisitor. My word is sacrosanct."
"You really believe that?"
There had not been a hint of indecision or self-consciousness in his voice.
"Everyone is supposed to believe what you say because you say you're an Inquisitor."
"My authority is absolute. Not even the Fabricator General of Mars can gainsay my command."
Gelsa nodded weakly.
"I see."
"You do not see, and you will not, because you must scrape an existence among these lowly decks."
Harkus said the words forcefully, but not out of anger, it seemed. Gelsa railed at the use of scrape as a definition of her life, but Harkus continued before she could offer protest.
"You can no more know of my perspective than you can imagine what it is to be princeps of this mighty war engine.
You are a cog within the machine, not the hand that guides its operation. I've seen exactly what can happen to this mighty war machine if the wrong cog is out of place, Gelser said hotly, shoulders bunching. Exactly. His insistence unnerved her, like a locomotive on tracks that could not be diverted, heading directly through whatever stood in its way. There was not an atom of compromise in his bearing. The cog is important, but it cannot be allowed to see the vaster machine. It must turn its course and bear its load without questioning its place in the mechanism, trusting to the other cogs and belts and engines that move around it. So I must trust you simply because you say you are an inquisitor. I didn't understand too much of the logical teachings we're given, but I know a circular argument when I see one. He sighed, seemingly in disappointment rather than vexation. He bowed his head, his voice dropping to a whisper. You are not the first to point out the fallibility of my position. Harkus flexed his fingers, whether in frustration or pain it was impossible to tell. The Moderatus Prime denounced me to the Hyperesia and took away my sigil, ordering that I be summarily and quietly disposed of. You are the only ally I have on the Casus Belli. You might be a small cog, but you understand enough of the machine to help me disrupt the hands of those that guide it. He looked directly at her, his eyes shining in the gloom. You can save the Casus Belli, Gelser Vingeint. The first real indication that the enemy were preparing for a counterattack was when they stopped retreating. Thousands of renegade infantry ceased their fleeing and started to dig in. Tank columns that had been heading full speed back to Az-Kalak returned to their berms. Within minutes, the entire front changed from one of mass panic to organized deployment. The three warhounds suddenly found themselves not chasing down ragged groups of survivors, but coming up against massed firepower. Shields flaring under intense battle cannon and las cannon fire. The war machines were forced to give ground against their smaller foes. The Nuosphere buzzed with concern as the Princeps retreated their engines, seeking the sanctuary of distance. This turn of events caused Exasus deeper unease. Exasus, initiate command Nuospheric connection.
Was the rout part of a ruse? Have we been tempted into precipitous assault?
Mondaras.
Turning back a warhound squadron is not comparable to halting the progress of a fully supported battle group. The Casus Belli alone is capable of meeting any threat from the Citadel.
Gevran.
When they see that we are not deterred, the retreat will begin again. The ruse is being played out now, trying to convince us they have reinforcements that can pose a threat. They are bluffing.
Exasus ran this possibility through Viz simulation routines while V broadcast a readiness order to the Skitari under Viz command. Weapons storage chambers were opened and heavier armaments distributed to the squads as they prepared themselves for disembarkation. Mondaras.
What are you doing, Dominus?
Exasus.
Being prepared. There are considerable underground defenses ahead. It would not be prudent to proceed against an unknown foe while also allowing the enemy's subterranean shelter. My company will be ready for defense clearance.
Gevran.
We are not stopping, Jauzanis. The command was clear. Az-Kalak must and will be broken by the end of the day.
Exasus.
The perceived transitory time of the local star is an arbitrary time frame to attach to such a significant endeavor.
Gevran.
That is another reason why your theorems will never be accepted. You lack finesse. You discard emotional evaluations.
Exasus.
That is untrue. I have significant formulae to account for biological factors such as hormone levels and fear responses. It is you that believes victory only comes with utter destruction of the foe.
Gevran.
A result of commanding such powerful weapons.
Exasus pulsed the digital equivalent of a grimace and contemplated the emerging battle data. Despite their withdrawal, the warhounds found no relent.
Having been pushed back out of proximity to the rebel forces, they were again targeted by the heavier artillery in the secondary defense line. Plasma warheads rained down from mobile launchers, turning the ground to glass amid the flicker of overloading void shields. Steel Wolf reeled as the second of its energy screens disappeared with a purple flash. Caught in a maelstrom of artificial star strikes, the Warhound backstepped. But in his haste, Princeps Cash did not pay attention to the broken defenses through which he had advanced. One of the Scout Titan's feet caught on the fractured remains of an entrenchment, toppling the war engine sideways. Iolona, Battle Group, Primary Broadcast.
Immediate support fire. Telemetrics, source position of incoming artillery strike. Omnisire's temper, blind missile barrage to provide cover for the Steel Wolf.
A data blurt coursed into Exasus's receptors from a subroutine that had been analyzing the enemy attack. Exasus. Direct trans, Omnisire's temper.
Negative on blind missile strike.
Direct trans, Iolona.
Princeps Senioris, the enemy gunners have already established their target coordinates. They are firing from out of contact already. Blind missiles will obscure our scanners and will not protect against indirect bombardment.
Iolona, direct trans, Omnisire's temper.
Abort missile strike. Await orders.
Direct trans, Exasus.
Suggestions, Dominus?
A flood of calculations poured through the Magos, amplified via a subsidiary routine V imported from Mondaras. Verifying the findings took extra time, but given the nature of the conclusion, Exasus had to be correct. As V transmitted, V used a visual magnifier to concentrate on the stricken Warhound. Its leg had snapped in the fall, the ruined joint sending out showers of sparks while plasma blooms crept closer. Exasus. Direct trans, Iolona.
Sacrifice Gambit. Steel Wolf cannot be saved. Suggest crew evacuation and increase telemetrics to determine course of incoming fire. Use Steel Wolf's death to ensure our counterblow eradicates the mobile artillery.
A moment of reluctance ebbed back across the noosphere, a product of the Princeps Senioris's biological sentiment. Exasus was saddened by the impending loss of the Titan, which had served Metallica and the Machine God for over 8,000 years. That such a reign of a lord of battle would end in these fickle circumstances was regrettable, but unavoidable. The calculations were not wrong. A flicker of a closed transmission rippled through the noosphere. Several pulmonary cycles later, the Warhound's head burst free from its mounting, becoming a short-range shuttle that took the command crew a few hundred meters further into enemy territory. At maximum magnification, Exasus saw figures clambering out of the torso access hatches. Tech priest Alaxa and two of her tributary assistants. A storm of plasma engulfed the forlorn Titan before they had climbed down the side of the war engine, bathing the view in white. Reducing magnification, the Magos saw explosion after explosion racking the Steel Wolf's cadaver. Even while we watched the demise of the Titan, the Magos' secondary cogitators scrolled energy output estimates across the view. Mondaras.
4 enemy gunnery positions located. Targeting data attached. Warhound escape module position located.
Exasus felt the inload of data across the noosphere, trickling through his calculations like ripples in water, the equations altering as consequences cascaded through the algorithms. V was aware of substantial noospheric traffic as orders and new firing solutions flashed between the Titan crews, but the Magos was not part of the data loop. It was an unintended reminder that V was not needed. After the intense bout of cogitation, the dormancy that followed felt empty. Beams of lasfire coursed across the hillsides, while flights of armor-piercing rockets arced through the smoke, but to Exasus, they were of little interest. It was with a sense of detachment that V did not even calculate their impact velocities, and V took only a passing interest in the kill efficiency data streaming from the other Titan crews. The Imperator's Hellstorm cannon thundered into life, and a distant woodland disappeared in fire. Exasus barely registered the onslaught as V accessed V's paused simulator data. V wiped clean the battle cache and started the simulation again, increasing the aggression ratings of the defenders to provide a greater challenge.
"That's quite a claim," said Gelsa. She rocked back on her heels, not sure what to do.
"You're not sure what to do," said Harkus. "If I'm lying, you need to turn me over to those thugs you rescued me from. If I'm not lying, that's the last thing you need to do."
"You seem like a smart one. What would you do?"
Gelsa looked for a telltale bulge of a weapon beneath his robes, but saw nothing. The multi-tool still in one hand, she passed him a rag to wipe away some of the blood. He winced as he touched the coarse cloth to his cheek.
"Benefits and losses," said the so-called Inquisitor.
His good eye took in everything, sizing up Gelsa, observing their surroundings.
"If I am not an Inquisitor, what have you to gain or lose?"
"Well..."
Gelsa wasn't used to this sort of thinking. She was usually faced with practical problems, not matters of logic.
"You might kill me."
"True. But if I were an Inquisitor, I might kill you as well. And if what I say is true and the casus belli is turned against the Imperium, you would be purged along with the others of the crew not party to the plot."
Gelsa's hands were sweaty, and her heart throbbed. The man talked about killing her as casually as she discussed a number 6 rawl line.
"So I'm in danger either way."
"You live and work inside a war engine of the Adeptus Mechanicus. Every time you go into battle, you're in danger."
"That's not the same. You're talking about a very specific danger. I've never expected one of my crewmates to kill me. Well, maybe once or twice, with the machine spirits in them. But that's not the snarl we're in."
A dark thought crossed her mind, and with it came a fresh surge of fear.
"The tech priests are going to come after you, aren't they? Either the loyal ones or the traitors, whichever want you dead."
"That is an accurate assessment, yes."
"And now that I've met you, I'm involved."
Gelsa licked her lips nervously.
"Whichever way the truth goes, I'm an accomplice."
"The moment you struck the hyperesia."
"Great."
She wanted to scream, but dared not take her eyes from the bloodied man.
"That's just incredible. You know what they do to heretics?"
"They will scald blast you with the heat overload valves," replied Harkus. "It will melt off your skin and then down to the bone, like burning alive, but slower and far more painful."
"That's right. After the torture to recant, obviously."
Gelsa thought she would vomit, but managed to stop the reflex.
"It is too late for you, Gelsa Vingent."
Harkus stood, as best the confines of the Twix deck allowed, grimacing with pain. Gelsa readied the multi-tool, but the man seemed barely capable of staying upright, much less violent action.
"If I am an enemy of the Machine God, you must report us both, for the good of the casus belli."
He turned an inquiring gaze on her, his eyes shadowed, blood crusted over his face. She said nothing, still trying to weigh up her options.
If he was in league with the heretics, then he would try to dissuade her from going to her superiors to protect himself.
Her implication in the plot was the defense he needed. Harkus was daring her to risk her own life.
"You're not the fastest of thinkers, are you?" he said.
"And you're not the nicest of people."
"Inquisitors never are."
A change in the timbre of the background noise interrupted Gelsa's train of thought.
"We're slowing," she said.
After a few seconds, she could identify the new rate of stride by the floor vibrations. Her eyes widened.
"Battle speed! We must be nearing the enemy."
Another sound drew her attention. Feet, on the deck above, moving with purpose as the work crews attended to their battle stations.
"I need to go," she said. "I'll be missed at roll call."
He held out a hand as she moved to pass him.
"The hyperesia will take you. They will torture you to find me."
His words sounded like a threat. Gelsa pulled back and raised the multi-tool, her fear flaring as anger.
"Try to touch me again, and I will end you," she said, fixing him with a glare.
He met her stare without reaction, his eyes as dead as the lenses of a vacuum mask. There was no fear there. Beaten almost to death, threatened with more violence, Harkus seemed utterly unconcerned. She had never seen someone with such conviction and self-assurance. It all felt wrong, which, as an adherent of the cult Mechanicus, was the worst possible reason for anything. Feelings, fleshy, subjective notions of emotion and belief, were no basis on which to make a decision. Even so, Gelsa felt that Harkus was telling the truth. She couldn't reckon the logic either way. Her mind was not made to weigh the facts in that manner. In the absence of orders or verifiable data, all she had was feeling.
"Let's assume you're telling the truth about being an Inquisitor," she said quietly.
She scarcely believed the words were coming from her lips, dragging her deeper into the plot.
"What's your plan?"
"I will reclaim my inquisitorial sigil and use it to rouse the faithful tech priests and oust the traitorous upper echelons."
He said this as if it would be as straightforward as tightening a flange knot or working the odds of a high acolytis throw in Omnisec.
"And where is this sigil?"
Harkus's eyes narrowed with anger.
"The Moderatus Prime took it when I presented it."
"So it's in the God Dex?"
"The command center, yes."
"How did you get in there the first time?"
"Without enough guile. I had misjudged the plot, thinking the Princeps Senioris alone was corrupted. Now I must be more circumspect. There's no telling who might be aiding the conspirators."
She heard a change in the rattle of the elevator chains and held up a hand to silence him. They shrank back into the shadows as a handful of indistinct figures descended past, clinging to the links. Gelsa recognized their work garb and a couple of faces.
"Just tributi," she whispered,
but she did not relax. Her subconscious interrogated every creak, moan, and shudder from the surroundings, desperately seeking anything amiss. The Imperator Titan had always been her sanctuary, even in the midst of battle. Now it felt alien and hostile, the shadows concealing unidentified foes.
"This sigil, that's all you need?"
"I am confident that the Dominus of the Scutari garrison of the Casus Belli remains loyal. He will heed the warning of an Inquisitor and relinquish the Princeps Senioris of command."
"We're going into battle!"
Judging by his lack of reaction, Harkus didn't fully understand the implications of this.
"You want to remove the Princeps in the middle of a battle," explained Gelsa. "That has to be the worst idea I have ever heard."
"I see your point."
The Inquisitor paused, his jaw clenched.
"I do not think the traitors intend to defect to the enemy while they are still with the rest of the battle group. Any treasonous activity would be met with immediate attack from the other Titans, and that is a battle even the Casus Belli cannot win. The Princeps will need to engineer a situation in which her treachery can occur without witnesses. She will isolate the Titan and purge any loyal elements within the crew. That gives us a short time."
"Purge the loyal elements."
Gelsa thought of Notassa and the other Dullahs and tried to remain calm. Harkus looked up, the sudden motion causing Gelsa to flinch. His eyes glimmered in the darkness, and Gelsa realized that his detached stare was due to implants, nothing more. He gazed through the decking, a silent snarl curling his lip.
"More Hyperesia are gathering above us. They have firearms. The search is beginning in earnest."
His unnatural eyes dimmed when his gaze moved to her.
"I cannot remain here any longer."
Every time Gelsa tried to think straight, he put her thoughts into a spin. She searched Harkus's face for any sign of deception, wondering if he was deliberately keeping her unsettled.
but she was more skilled at reading pressure gauges than people. One thing was clear. "You need to get out of the downdecks as soon as possible," she said. "The Hyperesia will be looking for you. If you can get into the Acropolis, you can lose yourself among the Skitari and gunnery crews."
"I need your help."
The Inquisitor made the request without hesitation or shame. When he continued, it was as if he were talking about another person rather than his own safety.
"You recognized me as an impostor in an instant, and others will also. Without your assistance, I will certainly be discovered and killed."
And that was the truth of it. Voices echoed down the conveyor shaft, harsh and inquiring, though Gelsa could not hear the actual words. She caught the buzz of a crude voxcaster. Though she could not discern the meaning, she knew by Narek cant when she heard it.
"A tech priest is leading them," she said with a shudder. "I know these decks well enough to run rings around the Hyperesia, but a tech priest..."
Gelsa faced a simple decision. Either she helped Harkus, or she clubbed him to death here and now, and hoped his corpse would buy her some clemency from the tech priests. He watched her, studying her face intently, perhaps looking for some warning of her decision. The eyes were likely not his only enhancement, and Gelsa wondered if he was quite as defenseless as he appeared. She took a breath, realizing that sometime in the last few seconds she had decided to help him. The Inquisitor, she told herself. If she thought of it in those terms, the situation didn't feel quite so terrifying, though no more real either.
"That way," she said, pointing to starboard with the multi-tool. "There's a ladder we can use. You go first."
Even if Harkus was an Inquisitor, Gelsa wasn't fool enough to turn her back on him.
Chapter 3. Setbacks. Iolona. Data log. Concept. Destruction.
"The traitors think they have won a victory, but they will discover that the destruction of our companion has earned them only the even greater wrath of the Omnisire. Their resistance is an affront to the Lord of Mankind, and their support of heretics an insult to the Machine God. Cassus Belli is the instrument of vengeance that will lay low their works and raise them from the annals of history."
The anger was not Iolona's, at least not hers alone. The rage that empowered the broadcast came from the depths of the MIU, a vocalization of the Cassus Belli's inner roar at the loss of Steel Wolf. The transmission was accompanied by a burst of imagery from the extensive battle archives of the Imperator. Pic and vid capture displays of burning cities and annihilated fortresses flashed through Exassus. The Titan's channeled thoughts played out to recordings of shell detonations and the shriek of plasma discharge, the voice of a war god writ in the language of death. Haley.
"We are the messengers of fate."
Gevran.
"In our vengeance, we shall erase these blasphemies."
Exassus tasked a minute portion of cerebral architecture to briefly acknowledge the sentiment, but felt no urge to contribute directly. The human's posturing was unnecessary. The machine god, as embodied by the Cassus Belli, already knew full well the requirements of the enemy's destruction. It had, through the officers of the Departamento Munitorum and the Collegia Titanicus, delivered the means for vengeance. Any further exhortation was inefficient, and, for lack of a more precise term, ungracious. Exassus, local transmit.
"We honor the machine god's divine code with deeds."
Gevran.
"Some of us will."
Exassus regretted Viz's outburst immediately and avoided further humiliation by redirecting full attention to the ongoing battle. Although their artillery support had been mostly curtailed, the rallied traitors continued to hold their positions against the Titan onslaught. For some time, they had exchanged long-range fire with the battle Titans, lighting up void shields with their ordnance, while the weaponry of the warlords, reavers, and warriors shredded ferrocrete defences and immolated battle tanks in response. Exassus. Direct trans. Mondaras.
"I am encountering difficulty identifying the defensive paradigm we are facing."
Mondorus.
Your error may be in attributing a paradigm when no such thing exists.
Exasus.
Your assessment may be correct, but it is advantageous to attribute to intent rather than accident if one wishes to maximize the efficiency of response.
Mondorus.
Very well. I will indulge you.
Exasus.
Further resistance increases the likelihood that previous retreats were intentional.
Mondorus.
Failure of earlier retreat may explain increased resistance.
Exasus.
Previous retreat was precipitous, disproportionate to damage inflicted at that stage. Artillery support has been neutralized, yet the enemy seem more determined now than earlier.
Mondorus.
Accepted. High probability that initial retreat was false. What is your extrapolation?
Exasus.
I am still at a loss to explain the benefit of such a maneuver. If the citadel contained forces capable of meeting the threat, it would be more efficient to deploy them at the outset, or later, when we have expended significant resources breaking the line. The enemy have given ground for no advantage, and have, to use an analogy from gambling parlance, shown their hand too early.
Mondorus.
Analyze strategic factor. Geographic advantage of new positions.
Exasus. Direct trans. Gratitude. The suggestion was precisely what Exasus had failed to identify. The staged retreat, masquerading as unintended route, masked the adoption of the new positions across the hills around Az-Kallak. V ran several topographical analyses of the routes to the citadel, but nothing significant drew his attention. If it was not the actual physical locations of the defenders, there had to be some other reason why they had pulled back 1.5 kilometers in the face of the Titan assault. Exasus. Analysis request. Lex Mechanica data logs.
Scrape historical records for reference to long-range weaponry within the citadel Az-Kallak.
Lex Mechanica data logs. Request response.
Last report of citadel defenses includes 14 quake cannons mounted on mobile turret arrangement, each quadrant defended by up to 8 cannons with overlapping firing arcs. Range increments increase with elevation. Maximum range, 25 kilometers with acceptable accuracy.
Caveat, dating, archive material.
Exasus had been immobile during his exchange with Mondorus and the data scrape, all energy directed towards systems monitoring and communication. Agitation stirred his mechanical form, causing the Magos to extend his articulated limbs as an expression of disturbance. The main displays contained a picture of ongoing devastation as the battle group's advance across the hills continued. Despite the firepower leveled upon them, the rebels were far more stalwart in their defense than against the initial assault, further adding to Exasus's suspicion that the first withdrawal had been a feint. V reiterated his concern in a blurt transmit repeat stub to the Princeps Senioris, not wishing to distract her further during lethal engagement. The distance to objective monitor, which had been calibrated for the central keep of Az-Kallak, read 15.3 kilometers. This placed the Imperator and its companions well within range of the city's main guns. Even so, the quake cannons were a known quantity, and it still made no sense to Exasus that the defenders would have laid their outer defensive line beyond the range of their most potent weapons. They initiated another communication with Mondorus, but kept the transmission open for the other tech priests, Moderati and Princeps Senioris, to intercede if they wished. Exasus. Direct trans, Mondorus.
We are approaching the targeting arc of Az-Kallak's primary weapons systems. It would be prudent to anticipate counterattack under the cover of the citadel batteries.
Mondorus.
Enemy targeting scans have been detected. Firepower quotient calculated for 8 Thor pattern quake cannons is still within tolerable impact parameters.
The Magos Dominus broadened this transmission to ensure that the rest of the command crew received the following exchange. The substranded a threat potential unease gradient to convey his growing anxiety with the situation. Exasus.
Extrapolate firepower quotient of quake cannons combined with nearby rebel personnel and armored vehicles.
A buzz of data flowed through Ver, whirling through algorithms like blood pumping along Vis vessels, powering exponential calculations rather than physical movement. Exasus matched the data with Vis' archival stores regarding the defenses of the Imperator, and then each of the Titans in attendance. Exasus.
Concentrated fire upon one target will lead to total destruction of Warlord class and below.
Iolona.
Progression estimates before retaliation?
Mondorus had already been plying the calculations through his own cogitators and answered immediately. Mondorus.
Depreciating enemy capability at 13% per standard minute. Warlord destruction estimated at 4 minutes. Reaver and warrior destruction estimated at 3 minutes.
Gevran.
At best, they could destroy one of the warlords and strip the shields of another.
Exasus.
Or eliminate 2 Reavers.
Mondorus.
To what purpose? Annihilation of Az-Kallak is inevitable, even with worst projected losses to the battle group.
Iolona.
Never rule out blind defiance or spite as a motivation. The enemy know they are defeated, but they wish to hurt their conquerors before they fall.
This idea intrigued Exasus, and V archived the thought for later incorporation into his theorem. A more pressing matter attracted the attention of the entire command crew when proximity surveyors scrambled into life, detecting a growing number of the power sources that had left the Citadel. Mondorus.
Surveyor banks require more power for resolution at this range.
Iolona.
Divert 10% output to scanner arrays from motive engines.
Seconds later, alarms flared across the noosphere as the guns on the walls of Az-Kallak opened fire. Trajectory data and payload assessments seared across Exasus's interlocution circuits. Again, it was the Logistari Prime that responded sooner, interconnected with the main surveyor arrays rather than relying on secondary reporting, as Exasus was forced to do by dint of his lesser role within the command crew. Mondorus.
Full bombardment, targeting the indomitable Guardian and Will of Iron.
The 2 warlords halted as the shells arced towards them, diverting power to their void shields so that each was encased in a glimmering hemisphere of energy. Discordant reactions fluttered through Exasus as V realized that the gunners in the Citadel had made an error. Exasus.
Why are they splitting fire?
Quake cannon rounds, each capable of leveling a building, slammed into the void shields of the 2 warlord titans. Arcs of power leapt as the energy field shunted the explosive energy of the impacts into warp space. To Exasus's visual senses, a coruscation of green and blue flowed around the war engines, while in Vir's metamathical analysis, the conflicting energy waves collided in pleasing spiral patterns. Flurries of anti-tank fire and smaller caliber guns scratched across the remaining shields. None of them were powerful enough to land a debilitating blow, but in concert, they gnawed at the warlord's defenses. Exasus felt the casus belli slow further as more power siphoned from the legs to the weapons, powering up the Imperator's primary guns. The rest of the battle group thrust onwards, their weaponry of no use against the city at this range. They targeted their ire against the troops still manning foxholes and gunpits, wading into the crisscross of defensive embrasures and trench lines like Scutari soldiers picking their way across uneven ground. The thrum of potential filled the noosphere as the plasma annihilator powered to full energy, the anticipation of Casus Belli's spirit spilling out through its princeps. But even the Imperator's greatest weapon could not hope to reach a foe still many kilometers distant. The ravening star that roared forth seconds later crashed into a company of traitor Lehman Russ tanks that had attempted to push around the flank of the battlegroup. 5 disappeared in a flash of incandescent power and startling energy coefficients, the ground where they had been replaced with a glass-sided crater and a rising cloud of vapor. Streaks of molten plasteel marked the crater edges, where cooling droplets of what had once been machines fell like rain. The hellstorm added a wrathful stream of shells to tear a fresh canyon through the ridge of a high hill ahead of the Casus Belli. Whole platoons of traitor Skitari and rebelling defense troopers died in the initial hail. As many again were crushed when the remaining hillside slipped away, tumbling thousands of tons of earth and rocks on the fortifications built across the valley. A kill efficiency of 96.4% sent a pleasurable quiver of appreciation through Exassus, but the momentary elation did not detract from the Magos' underlying pensiveness. V sidelined an ongoing simulation to make more processing power available to assess the enemy's potential objectives. Faster and faster, V ran prognosticating algorithms, shutting down sensory inputs and redundancy systems to concentrate all available cogitation on the matter. Swathed in virtual and visual darkness, the Magos let the equations dance through V, streaming together into a single conjoined extrapolation. A brief lance of formative data broke the meta silence when the city batteries opened fire again. Targeting predictions seemed amiss at first, locating the point of impact among the Reavers now spearheading the advance, rather than upon the Will of Iron and Indomitable Guardian, whose shields were already partially overcome. Exassus took the data as truth, sparing nothing to re-evaluate the trajectories. Instead, V paused all other calculations to hone the forecast antirhythms, those parts of V's program that attempted to emulate the enemy's intent. One consequence pulsed through the findings, repeated again and again as V re-ran the data flow. Exassus.
We have stopped, as have the targeted Titans.
Mondaras.
Delay is of no consequence to the success of our mission.
Iolona.
What is the significance?
Gavrin.
We have not stopped. We have been halted. To what purpose?
Before Exassus could examine the situation further, a new development interrupted V's analysis. Mondaris.
New power source signals identified as super heavy armored vehicles.
Iolona.
Type? Pattern? Do they have Titan killers?
Even disregarding the Princeps Senioris's overly emotive phraseology, the thought caused Exassus some trepidation. There was a high probability that the Heretic forces had turned dedicated anti-Titan platforms, such as the Shadow Sword, Stormblade, and Doomhammer. Was the emergence of the super-heavy tanks sufficient to justify the loss of lesser vehicles and personnel in the feint? Had they been lured closer to the city so that these vehicles could bring their attack to bear before detection? Was there sufficient time to combat the emergent threat? Conflicting threat value revisions cascaded through the Magos' system so fast it bordered on paralysis. Mondaris. Direct trans. Closed. Exassus.
Your negative data flow is infecting my core correlations. You are encountering an open loop paradox. Withdraw your inquiries.
Exassus. Direct trans. Closed. Mondaris. Apology. Exassus.
Insufficient data to submit analysis.
Gavrin.
Your input was not requested, Jauzanus.
Exassus.
Enemy anti-Titan reinforcements cannot account for adopted strategy. Seek further data.
Iolona.
Do not clatter the neosphere with conjecture, Dominus. If you have no pertinent analysis, we must concentrate on combating the enemy as we encounter them, not fighting phantasms of your calculations.
Exassus whipped back of his neospheric presence like a prey creature fleeing for its burrow. Leaving only a narrow data tendril to absorb a trickle of incoming data, the Magos Dominus retracted all of his ongoing simulations, which had multiplied a dozenfold while examining the possible attack vectors of the new traitor forces. Thwarted both by the censure of the Princeps Senioris and his own cogitational limitations, the Magos Dominus busied herself recalibrating several non-functional secondary systems, a form of digital fidgeting. Only dimly aware of the continuing data stream, V spared just a fraction of his calculating processes to monitor the arrival of 3 Shadow Sword Titan Hunters, escorted by a similar number of Baneblade and variant super-heavy tanks. The formidable engines unleashed their firepower against the lead Reaver, forcing it to halt to return fire with its plasma blast gun and a storm from its missile launcher amid the cerulean detonations of its void shields. Mondorus.
Citadel batteries firing again. Renewed targeting of Will of Iron and Indomitable Guardian.
Frustration coursed along Exarsus's data stream and remaining nervous system, leading to a flurry of physical agitation as the released energy demanded to be expressed. To return the weight of the Quake Cannon's fire against the Warlords was even more illogical than the first salvo. The Titans had restored their void shields and were advancing again, but they were far from a direct threat to the wall guns. It seemed that Mondorus had been correct in the assumption that the defenders sought only to delay the attack. Delay? What could be earned by slowing the assault if it was not to concentrate the available firepower? How could the traitors gain advantage from stalling the battlegroup's attack? Evacuation was a possibility, but readings did not suggest any mass withdrawal from the city. Another potential reason was to gain time for the preparation of fresh forces as yet unready. This seemed a greater probability, and Exarsus examined it further, pausing other avenues of inquest. Posing the question to the antirhythm circuits, the Magos tried to position herself in the thought processes of the rebels. In reversed circumstance, what was the solution to the problem posed by an attacking Titan battlegroup? An equally dominant response. What weapons system was more dominant than a Titan battlegroup? Mondorus.
Orbital energy surge. Detecting surveyor scans from orbiting starship.
Target alarms blared across the Imperator and echoed through the noosphere from Titan to Titan, a ripple of activity that would have been taken for panic among living soldiers. The transitory piece of orbital data from earlier surfaced through Exarsus's calculations, too late to be of use. What Gelser had described as a ladder was just a series of square hooks fastened to the wall, each barely large enough for a hand or foot. Harkus crouched at the edge of the semicircular opening in the floor and looked up, his eyes flashing again as his augmented vision pierced the gloom.
"It is empty," he declared.
The Inquisitor reached out a hand to the nearest hook, his jaw visibly clenched in pain. A clatter from the direction of the chain conveyor announced the arrival of several hyperesia. Lantern beams swept across the Twix deck, casting roving shadows. One of the lights passed across the 2 fugitives, and a triumphant shout announced their discovery. More lamps flashed in their direction, bobbing as the guards carrying them ducked into the shallow space.
"You're too weak to climb," said Gelser, easing Harkus aside.
She hooked 2 fingers onto a rung, locking them in place. She grabbed a handful of the Inquisitor's stolen robe and stepped across, bare toes finding purchase on another step. In situations like this, and when clambering to even more inaccessible locations in the down decks, she was glad of her reinforced toes, even though they prevented her from using footwear. Harkus wriggled in her grip, making it hard to keep a tight hold.
"Relax. I've carried heavier than you up and down these shafts."
The Inquisitor went limp as she pushed with her leg and swung her fingers up to the next hook. She found her rhythm almost immediately, quickly climbing while the shouts of the hyperesia increased below. The ladder space brightened and dimmed as they directed their lamps after their quarry, the light glinting from the rungs and Gelser's exoskeleton.
"Where are we going?" asked Harkus.
"Up,"
grunted Gelser, which was the only answer she had.
"Let's just get some distance, and then we'll worry about where next."
Blinking, they passed into the lumen glare of the duodecas. The climb space was at the end of an access corridor that ran to the central arterial route, which was thankfully devoid of occupants. Gelser did not look down, but knew that the hyperesia would not be far behind.
"I'll outpace them,"
she assured Harkus, continuing towards the Entercas, the 11th level, as the tech priests reckoned their numbering downwards from the holy decks.
"Can you move faster than vox waves?"
A high-energy bolt flashed down from above Az-Kallak, slamming into the shields of the Hammer of Metallica, the foremost Reaver Titan. Its void generators already overloaded by the super-heavy tanks and incessant fire of smaller foes, the war engine had no defense against the orbital strike. Exasus registered the tremendous energy outflow, surmising a lance weapon had fired, at the same instant that the beam split the Reaver in half from carapace to groin. So swift was the killing stroke that the reactor did not explode, but instead roiling plasma spilled like guts from the devastated Titan as it fell sideways, consumed by the fire of its own power source. The death shock resounded across the noosphere, silencing all traffic for several milliseconds. Exasus, mostly disengaged from the data flow, responded first. Exasus.
They can only target accurately if we are static and of sufficient distance from their own super-heavy vehicles.
Gavrin.
Late wisdom is no wisdom at all.
Exasus was about to respond that the Moderatus Prime had not foreseen the eventuality, but a general broadcast from the Princeps Senioris blanketed all other signals. Cassus Belli's rage flowed across the carrier waves with her words. Iolona.
All forces, direct attack, full speed, engage while mobile. Let the Skitari support finish the survivors. Focus all firepower on the Titan killers and Citadel.
The transmission ended with a monstrous swelling of noospheric pressure, culminating in a long blast from the Imperator's war sirens. Its deafening mechanical roar echoed across the hills, the war sirens of the other Titans answering with their own cries for vengeance. They reached level Decas before noise and lights above them warned of waiting Hyperesia, where the ladder ended two levels above. Gelsa leapt away from the wall, landing easily on the plate decking with Harkus still firmly in her grip. She lowered the Inquisitor to the floor and sucked in lungfuls of air. While the exoframe boosted her muscles, it did nothing for her constitution. She had been rebuilt for strength, not endurance. The climb had left her heart hammering against her ribs, her chest heaving. Mostly the climb, she admitted to herself, still feeling the fizz of shock coursing through her.
"We need to keep moving," warned Harkus, eyes shining as he scanned their surroundings.
Gelsa moved to the archway where the shaft joined the main crew space. The 8th, 9th, and 10th decks were a contiguous maze of walkways, ladders, and stairs, built around the main power conduit that ran from the reactor up to the holy decks and Acropolis. Through the mesh of the decking, she saw white-robed priests attending to the power relays, their bionics reflecting the amber glare of readouts and indicator lumens as the power output increased. Around them bustled the Deleuze of the cult Metallica, lifting bracing spars, carrying spare cabling up from the stores, attending to the other preparations for battle. The air was thick with sweat and humidity from the taxed heat exchangers. Pairs of small children darted around with cloths and buckets, wiping moisture from the rails and steps and drying off pipe housings, circuit plates and access ports in a never-ending struggle against corrosion. Among the half-naked laborers drifted the epilectors in robes of white edged with red, occasionally barking remonstration at some real or imagined laxity. Not full tech priests, they were nevertheless natives of Metallica, and hence considered superior in the eyes of the hierarchy. Gelsa strained for sight of a familiar face, but she did not often stray below deck Eptas. Even so, she knew the quickest way up to the Acropolis.
"This way," she said, flicking fingers for Harkus to follow as she stepped out of the shaft.
She headed left along a walkway and past the circular housing of the starboard gyro. Feeling the deck beneath her feet was a comfort, a reassuring touch after the preceding minutes of uncertainty.
"When I get you to the Acropolis, I'm done," she told Harkus.
She squeezed between a vertical pipe and the ferrocrete brace of an abdominal armor plate.
"You should be able to find your own way to the god decks from there."
"Of course."
The Inquisitor did not look at her as he replied, his attention drawn to something above them.
"And then I suppose I'll have to find somewhere to stay out of sight until you've done what you need to do." She pushed up a loop of flexible hose and ducked beneath it, holding it for Harkus to follow. "You know, when they'll stop hunting me," she continued. "You'll do that, right? You'll call off the hyperesia?"
"I would suppose so."
He looked up again, brow creased.
"There are a number of them stationed at a gateway on the deck above. We appear to be moving towards them."
"Damn!" Gelsa grimaced. She stopped and tapped a finger to the cog symbol in her forehead, a habit she had when thinking, as if she could make her brain work faster.
"They'll have a squad at the ports there, too. This is going to be harder than I thought. Maybe we could scale the tertiary dampeners."
As she spoke, she led him out into the main concourse, stepping in behind a trio of tributi carrying coils of replacement generator cable.